When I was a kid, every year at Christmas, there would be a gift for me under the tree labeled to grow into. This was almost invariably an item of clothing, pants that could be hemmed and belted and then let out again, or a too big sweater that could be worn baggy for a season or two. It looks kind of cool, right? Oversized, my mom would say when I modeled it. Sometimes it was something I couldn't wear at all yet, but that she thought would be nice to have tucked away in the back of my closet, waiting for the day it would fit. While I did love getting new clothes, and I still do, my favorite Christmas gifts were always books. After every present was unwrapped and the piles of crumpled paper were cleared away, you could find me curled up in my too big sweater, nose in a book, stocking full of candy nearby, head lost in another world. In the summertime, I had a favorite tree whose branches formed a notch halfway up, a perfect seat where I would scramble, book, and snack carefully balanced and settle in for hours. I remember reading The Wednesday Witch by Ruth Chu, cover to cover, one afternoon in that tree, which was in the front yard of the church my stepfather pastored in Ohio. When I moved to Brooklyn 25 years later, I learned that the neighborhood I had settled in, Kensington, is where Ruth Chu lived when she wrote The Wednesday Witch for her children. I read it to my daughters, and we recognized all the place names that had gone right over my head as a child. Ocean Parkway, the lake and Prospect Park, Brighton Beach, Coney Island, where Mary Jane flies atop James, the enchanted vacuum cleaner. By that time, I had begun to write myself, but I was shy about it. I wasn't ready to show anyone what I was writing, much less call myself a writer. All the writers I knew said they'd wanted to be writers since they were kids. I had not. Growing up, reading was like breathing to me. I inhaled everything. The characters in my favorite books were as real to me as my own family, maybe more real. I relied on the Quimbys and the Krupniks and the Murrays in a way that I couldn't rely on my own loved ones, who always seemed to be missing when I needed them, whether they were fighting and crying behind a closed door or living 2,000 miles away from me. I learned that it was safer to love people who were trapped inside the pages of a book. That way, you could hold them close and bring them with you everywhere. Still, the difference between reading a book and writing one felt like the difference between riding a roller coaster and knowing how to build one. I was eager to line up over and over again to crest that hill and zoom down, hands in the air, screaming myself hoarse. That didn't mean I had a clue how to design a ride of my own, nor did I have any desire to do so. Words were just a thing I was good at. I won the class spelling bee every week, every year, all through elementary school, until I felt sheepish about it, like I should apologize to my classmates for spoiling the fun. I could write anything and make it sound good, or at least good enough, with not much effort, so I never put much in. Why is it so hard to see our own gifts? If I can do something, if it's easy for me, then it must not be that hard or that special. What I wanted was to be a doctor. But when I said this to my parents, I was met with worried looks and heavy sighs. Medical school is hard, they told me. You're smart, but doctors have to be really smart. And medical school is expensive. It's not for families like ours. I believed them. Why wouldn't I? I got kicked out of high school biology class after I made my fetal pig dance when I was supposed to be dissecting it. I thought my bravado made me look tough, unafraid of this horrifying thing we were supposed to be doing, and I knew it made the boys laugh. If I wasn't smart enough to be a doctor, then I could at least entertain people and get boys to like me. I graduated college with a degree in theater and went to work at a coffee shop. Pretty soon I had a husband, two babies, and no meaningful career path ahead. I breastfed those babies with books balanced on their fuzzy little heads. I devoured novels and nonfiction, self-help and memoir, short stories and essays. I was hungry for words in a way I hadn't been since my days perched in the branches of that tree in Ohio. I think half the reason I nursed my girls into toddlerhood was so I could put my feet up, snuggle them into my lap, and read a chapter or two in peace. As they grew, so did the spark inside me. The idea that maybe I could write, that maybe I was supposed to write, but I was still terrified to tell anyone about my ambition. I secretly entered a writing contest, and when I got a letter telling me I'd been a finalist, I was as excited as if I'd actually won. I submitted an essay to an indie parenting magazine, and when the editor emailed to tell me she wanted to publish it, I literally jumped up and down, shouted with joy, and scared my children. Mm-hmm. The editor of that magazine, Curlin Richter, went on to become a priest and found Bushwick Abbey, where we met years later after Emily Scott, the founding pastor of this congregation, recommended I check out this other cool church in Brooklyn. Sometimes God plays things close to the vest, and other times, they really tip their hand. I'll skip the subsequent highs and lows of my writing career. It's hard for me to say that with a straight face. My writing career. Except to say that writing is a gift I'm still growing into. Like many gifts, it is not what I would have picked out for myself. It's lonely. It's painful as often as it's joyous. And sometimes after I've messed around long enough to finally settle down and get to work, I feel lit from within, a transcendence that I can only understand as God at work within me. God, Spirit, whatever anyone wants to call it, gave me this gift with no gift receipt. So I'm learning to trust it and to be grateful for it. It's still kind of big on me, but that just means I've got plenty of room to grow. Mm-hmm.